Episode 5. The conclusion to the three-part series, A Young Person's Guide to the American Political System. Critical thinking question. And despite all that you've learned in school, the answer to this one should still be totally obvious. Who is the owner of you? Episode 5 of School Sucks Podcast, A Young Person's Guide to the American Political System, Part 3. Today is the concluding installment in this three-part series about the U.S. government and political system in America. Those nasty topics that we have to kind of sweep out of our way before we can start addressing the real problems with this thing called public education and before we start to present some real solutions. One quick note before we go any further with today's topic. New website related to the show, edulution.com. That is edu-lu-tion.com. You can contact me there. You can leave some comments. I will post them to the site. I'm really looking forward to some comments of people who totally disagree with me, who are completely outraged by what I'm saying. That might just get you an invitation on the show, and we can have a debate. I would really look forward to that. So please visit that site. There's links on the Podomatic page, and anything that all of you wonderful listeners or subscribers can do to build awareness about the show would be appreciated. Leaving comments on iTunes, comments on Podomatic. We have a fan page on Facebook. I'd like to get some fans on it. That would all be very helpful. So, and I appreciate everyone's downloads and subscriptions to the show so far. I think that's great. So just a quick recap. The first episode in this three-part series was entitled Myths of Democracy and the Illusion of Freedom. The second installment was called Politics is Force. And today's will be entitled Authoritarian Absurdities versus the Philosophy of Liberty. So there's been a lot of vitriol, a lot of angst, a lot of anger, it would seem, maybe in the last two episodes about politicians, the political system, and the American government. Today we're going to actually talk about some alternatives and some solutions to this problem, really by going into some detail about the philosophy that animates a lot of my outrage about what goes on in America and around the world when it comes to government. Remember, the overarching goal of the last two episodes and today's episode is to explain why I am so resistant to the idea of participating in the political process to bring about change in education or anything else. This is an absurd fantasy. It does not work. It only makes problems more complicated and worse. Politics is force. That's the weapon that I was talking about in the first episode. And I do not feel like it is all right, and I hope you agree with me, to impose my will on other people with the use of force. If you are participating in politics, you are using force or rationalizing other people's use of force. And, you know, I'm still connected, I feel, or in touch with mainstream thought enough to understand how subversive some of this sounds, and understand how subversive it is to say, I really hope that these three episodes about politics dissuade young people from becoming involved with the political process at any level, certainly not as a politician, but even as a voter. Why would you embrace the use of force, of aggression, this antisocial, non-cooperative behavior as the means of solving problems or making the world better? So, if you are a young person and you've thought about getting involved in politics, even as a voter, I actually thought of a suggestion for you. If you want to turn over a portion of your money to pretend you're participating in something, that's going to have the same outcome whether you pretend to participate or not, I would really suggest that you try fantasy football. No one gets killed, no one gets their life destroyed, no one gets their savings wiped out, nobody gets robbed. I really think you'll love it. All of the violence in football is voluntary. Nobody is misled into walking out onto the gridiron thinking that there's going to be a Scrabble game there. They know they're going to get tackled. They know they're going to get thrown to the ground. The average fantasy football league you can get into a lot cheaper than the average political campaign contribution. So I really recommend that. There's plenty of resources online. Check it out. Oh, one more positive benefit about fantasy football versus politics. In fantasy football, you're interacting with people who like football instead of people who like rationalizing or cheering on the violent, antisocial, non-cooperative behavior of sociopathic strangers who don't care about them. So it's a much healthier activity, I would say, as well. The goal of today's show is hopefully a clear and concise presentation of what is behind, what is really behind School Sucks Podcast. So today we're going to be contrasting what I called authoritarian absurdities against the philosophy of liberty. The philosophy that is behind all my views about public education, politics, and government. So we're going to start with the authoritarian absurdities. It's a list, and my source for this list is the Austrian economist Hans Hermann Hoppe. This is actually from a speech that he recently gave at the Mises Institute, which was also featured on the Lou Rockwell Show. I'll make sure there's a link to that in the show notes. Now, I believe that the embrace of these absurdities is a prerequisite for anybody participating in the political process, whether they want to admit that they embrace these absurdities or not. Number one, somebody else owns you, or another group of people owns you, or even you are not the 100% owner of yourself, your body, your labor, your time, your mind, basically your life. Number two, a person or group of persons should be able to claim ownership over resources that they did not obtain through first use or voluntary transfer. Voluntary transfer is obvious. That's a mutually beneficial exchange. I have something, you have money, your money is worth more to me than my something, and vice versa, so we exchange. That's voluntary transfer, whether it's resources or land or finished goods, whatever. First use is how unowned or unused land comes under legitimate ownership. A person becomes the owner of an unowned piece of land if they are the first user of that land, if they are the first person to mix their labor with the natural resources of that land. So you can't just claim to own land because, you killed the people who were living on it, or you just kind of hop from place to place saying, this is mine, okay, now this is mine. It doesn't work like that. You have to mix your labor, your time and energy with the natural resources, and that land becomes yours. You have a legitimate claim to that land if it was unused. Three, the product of a person's labor and time should become the property of somebody else. And four, it's okay to take things from people without their consent or without a clear understanding, or in other words, a contract, of what the taker will exchange with the giver for those things. So these are the four authoritarian absurdities, and this is really the short list. There's plenty more, but I thought it would be to our benefit today to keep this brief. Now, as far as these things are concerned, these are behaviors, these four authoritarian absurdities, are behavior that a decent moral person would never engage in, nor would they support any person who did engage in these things. I mean, a decent person would never claim ownership over another human being. They would never claim a right to somebody else's property or to somebody else's land. And they would never create the illusion of a voluntary exchange just to get money or resources from another person. That's despicable behavior. It's really criminal behavior. But let's do a thought experiment. Let's pretend that there's this group of individuals, very small group, very, very immoral group of people, who claim to have access to this magic soap that certain individuals can use to cleanse the criminality out of these behaviors. And let's see what would happen. And if, you know, I know we're adults here, so if magic soap is a little bit too far-fetched, we could instead say a magic costume or a magic organization that they're a part of that cleanses the criminality out of what they do. Oh, there's one more little thing I want you to imagine in this thought experiment. The people who do not have the magic soap or do not get to wear the magic costume or be part of the magic organization, they believe that its magical powers are real. In other words, they accept the behavior of the people who have the soap or the costume or are in the organization. They accept their behavior as legitimate. Oh man, now let's see what happens. Now, perhaps some of you don't have that active of an imagination, and you're saying, Brett, this is so stupid. People would never be naive enough to believe that there could be some kind of soap or costume or organization that certain people would have access to that would make a special set of moral rules applicable to them that weren't applicable to everybody else. I mean, imagine the power disparity. Imagine the predation and the chaos that would stem from that. People would never believe in such a ridiculous thing. So if you don't have the imagination to conjure up this fictional scenario that I'm talking about, maybe I could provide some context that would allow something like this to occur. Let's say that this belief in this magic soap organization costume stems from a time when people were more superstitious, when they were more willing to believe in magic, and they didn't use reason, and they didn't use logic. So they would believe something simply because it was their folklore, because it was what their parents believed. And it just was perpetuated generation after generation, really, without question, right up to the modern day. Also, the people claiming to have the magic soap, this once very believable idea, had been using their power to perpetuate this belief, to make people believe that the magic soap was real, or their magic costume was real, or their magic organization that gives them special privileges and allows this moral relativism to apply to them is legitimate. So hopefully that context will make this absurd, I know, scenario a little bit more feasible. So moving on. If you think about a certain group of people being able to do the things that I discussed in the authoritarian absurdities, a lot of really bad things suddenly become possible. If a person can claim to have ownership over somebody else's life, they can send that person to die for their own cause. They certainly have no problem seizing control over their property. And if they have a right to seize control over their property, who knows how carried away they'll get. They might say, well, you know, in addition to taking your property, what I'm going to do is I'm actually going to do things that I want to do now, or things that me and my friends want to do now, and we're going to defer the costs of those things to your children. We'll just, if we can take property from people, who says that somebody has to already be born for us to seize some of their property? We're just going to have a debt that they'll pay. If most people accept the legitimacy that a group of people can own somebody's life or somebody's body or somebody's self, there's no obstacle to this. This all becomes very possible. Remember, if the people with the magic soap have this leverage over the people who do not have the magic soap, they can just take more and more and more of their property whenever they see it fit. Because they could also take control of the person's body and say, okay, your body's going in a cage. If you don't like the way that we take your property, or you don't like how much of your property we take, or you don't agree with what we do with your property when we take it, you have no right to claim ownership over these things. Where's your magic soap? And, you know, sorry if somebody led you to believe that this was going to be like a negotiation. And I think if an observer stumbled across this society with these people claiming to have magic soap and the people believing in the power of that soap, they would notice a major power disparity between the two groups. It would almost appear that there were two sets of laws. Now let's complicate the thought experiment a little bit. Say one of the people who doesn't have access to the magic soap, but has always been led to believe in the existence of the magic soap, suddenly says, wait a minute, this is bullshit. There's no such thing as magic soap. This is how, why would we ever even believe this? That this magic power could make certain moral rules applicable to one group of people, but not another group of people. And then out of spite, they decide that they're going to start behaving like the people who claim to have the magic soap. Let's also change the names of the groups. Let's call the people who claim to have the magic soap government officials. And let's call the people who believe in the existence of the magic soap citizens. And let's follow the unfortunate path of this one citizen who wants to try this experiment where he follows the same moral rules that the government officials do. A citizen watches as a government official exercises this privilege of ownership over somebody else. Maybe there's a war that needs to be fought entirely for the benefit of the government officials and their friends. So the government official or the group of government officials says, you, Joe Jones, you're going to go and fight in this war. So the citizen, maybe they're, you know, a little soft, they say, oh, neat, I'm going to try that. Well, suddenly, they find themselves being charged with a crime of either kidnapping or enslavement. That same citizen watches a government official or a group of government officials claiming ownership over resources that they did not obtain through voluntary transfer. And this could be through something like eminent domain. And the citizen says, oh, neat, I'm going to try that. But unfortunately, when they do it, it somehow becomes trespassing and vandalism. That same citizen, this poor bastard, watches the government official take control over the product of another person's time and labor and says, oh, neat, I'm going to try that. Well, for the government official, it's called taxation, but when the citizen does it, it's theft. And finally, the citizen watches the government official demonstrate the idea that it's somehow okay to take things from people without a clear understanding of what the taker will exchange with the giver for those things. And here the citizen could have watched, boy, anything the government does, education, defense, protection services, public works management, you name it. And the citizen says, oh, neat, I'm going to try that. So he comes up with an idea, also realizing that when the government claims to be able to solve some kind of problem, they actually make the original problem worse. Or, better yet, they replace the original problem with a much, much larger problem. And to best mimic this, he's going to start a pest control business. So he finds people who have pest problems, like squirrels in their attic. And he goes and he says, hey, man, for this amount of money, I can solve that squirrel problem of yours. So the person gives him the money and he burns their house down. Presto, no more squirrel problem. But when he does basically the same thing that the government does, he is an arsonist. Now this guy, like I said, he's a little soft. So this wouldn't have been the right thing to do, to actually carry out the same types of violence himself that he had watched the government officials do. And the better approach probably would have been to not comply with their demands because he realized that there was no magic soap. But if he had done that for so many different things, he always would have found himself in a legal process where the government officials could bring charges against him and then be the arbitrator or the mediator in their own dispute. Now, I know the incredulity of that sounds almost shocking. You're probably like, well, how could that ever be set up? How could there ever be a system where people who bring the charges get to make the decision? Remember, magic soap makes a lot of things possible. And he would have gotten virtually no support from his fellow citizens because, I forgot to mention this, they had also been tricked into believing that they were the ones giving the magic soap to the government officials. So they're just running around saying, this is our fault! We gave them the magic soap! It's sad, isn't it? Just like the myth of magic soap, the myth that certain special moral rules or ownership privileges over other people and their stuff could apply to certain people is ridiculous.
Oh! How'd you do?
How'd you do, good lady? I'm Arthur, King of the Britons. Whose castle is that?
King of the who?
The Britons.
Who are the Britons?
Well, we all are. We are all Britons. And I am your king.
Didn't know we had a king. I thought we were an autonomous collective.
You're fooling yourself. We're living in a dictatorship. A self-perpetuating autocracy in which the working classes...
Oh, there you go, bringing class into it again.
That's what it's all about. It's only people who...
Please, please, good people, I am in haste. Who lives in that castle?
No one lives there.
Then who is your lord?
We don't have a lord.
What? I told you, we're an anarcho-syndicalist commune. We take it in turns to act as a sort of executive officer for the week.
Yes.
But all the decisions of that officer have to be ratified at a special bi-weekly meeting.
Yes, I see.
By a simple majority in the case of purely internal affairs.
Be quiet.
But by a two-thirds majority in the case of...
Be quiet. I order you to be quiet.
Order? Who do you think he is?
I'm your king.
Well, I didn't vote for you.
You don't vote for kings.
Well, how do you become king, then?
The Lady of the Lake. Her arm clad in the purest shimmering samite, held aloft Excalibur from the bosom of the water, signifying by divine providence that I, Arthur, was to carry Excalibur. That is why I'm your king. Listen, strange women lying in ponds, distributing swords is no basis for a system of government. Be quiet! But you can't expect to wield supreme executive power just because some watery tart threw a sword at you.
Shut up!
I mean, if I went round saying I was an emperor just because some moistened bint had lobbed a scimitar at me, they'd put me away.
Shut up! Will you shut up?
Ah, now we see the violence inherent in the system.
Shut up!
Oh, come and see the violence inherent in the system! Help, help! I'm being repressed!
Bloody peasant!
Oh, what a giveaway. Do you hear that? Do you hear that, eh? That's what I'm on about. Do you see him repressing me? You saw it, didn't you?
Wash your hands frequently. Cover your sneezes with your sleeve, not your hands.
Now, any rational person with their eyes open will recognize the double standard going on here, and they will also recognize the complete absurdity associated with that double standard, as well as the dangers associated with it. So then, the rationalizations begin. People will say, well, yeah, I understand what you're saying, but the government provides services, and these means are necessary to those ends, that it has to do these things so it can provide services for the common good. To which I might respond, so you're saying that these services that the government does are good? And of course they would say yes. And I would say, well, in many respects, I agree that these are things that are good. Like, it's good to have roads. It's good to have infrastructure. It's good to have sewage. It's good to have a fire department. It's good to have some kind of protection service. All of those things are good. And yes, the government does all those things because they maintain a coercive monopoly over those services. No one's allowed to compete with them. But let me ask you this, rationalizer. If these things are good, why do they need to be forced on people, or why do they need to be funded coercively? Like I said before, the things that are good for you, that you will benefit from, never need to be imposed on you with force. And think about the other things that are good for you. Who makes you buy food? Who sticks a toothbrush in your mouth every morning? Who makes you put pants on before you leave the house? All those things are good for you, too. Nobody forces you to do them. Nobody drags you to the mall to buy clothes or drags you to the drugstore to buy hygiene products. People do those things because it's in their self-interest to do them. Now, I admit that a lot of these infrastructure or public works things that we're talking about that are provided by the government are a little bit more complicated than getting dressed and feeding yourself and hygiene. But to think that the only way to provide them or the only way to have them is through violence is ridiculous. Remember, I said before, there has been no idea that retarded human civilization more than the idea that the way something was being done at any given time was the best possible way that it could be done. because the way it's being done right now is with coercion and force. This can't be the best solution in the 21st century for human beings. And while we're on the topic of infrastructure, I would have to say that the most common rationalization I probably have heard in my life for these authoritarian absurdities, when I express my views, the response I get is, well, what about the roads? What about the roads? Certainly, if it wasn't for this violence, we'd all be driving through the woods. Well, I would respond, what about the roadblocks? And I don't mean literal roadblocks like police DWI checkpoints. I mean impediments. I mean the government monopolizing these services is a roadblock to what would otherwise be competitive, thriving, innovative industries with an abundance of choice. We have no idea what is possible when the government monopolizes something. We have no idea what other kinds of services or alternatives could be provided. So I hope this dispels this rationalization, this myth that this violence, these authoritarian absurdities are necessary to provide services. But the people who do these rationalizations for these authoritarian absurdities are not done yet. They have one more trick up their sleeve, one more card to play. They'll say, don't you understand that people are dangerous? And sure, there's people out there who don't want to cooperate with others, who want to use force to get their way, who feel like they're better than other people and more deserving than other people, and will just take things from people to help themselves. And right now, they're pretty easy to find because most of them are in Washington, D.C., or swinging from the umbilical cord of the government, or in state capitals or other bureaucracies. But these types of people are always going to exist. So when people say that, don't you get it, that people are dangerous, I would ask them, so you're saying you don't trust individuals. You don't trust the average man on the street. And they would say, no, of course not. I would say, okay, but you will put your trust in other individuals who are also complete strangers and have a reputation for being dishonest and manipulative and deceiving, who have shown nothing but a desire to exercise power over other people. You will trade a generalized threat of force or aggression or predation against you for a centralized guarantee of it. That sounds more dangerous to me. So when people say we need government as it is because people are dangerous, it's almost like they forget or they don't realize that the government is just a concept, it's just an aggregation of these people they're so afraid of. But these are the kinds of people who prove to you that they want power over other people just by seeking careers in government, careers in politics. Now, why would you want to give people like that a weapon that they could use against you? Because you know what I think is really dangerous about human beings? Power. So many crimes are motivated by a desire for power. Criminals are people who, more often than not, feel that they can't achieve what they want through voluntary means. If you think about it, a thief wants something. They feel that they lack the power to obtain that something through voluntary transfer. So what do? They either use force or they disrespect the property rights of another person to obtain it. A rapist feels that they lack the power to have a voluntary sexual interaction. So what do? They use force to get that sexual interaction. Now, there's another problem. Saying that the centralized guarantee of violence is better than a generalized threat of violence, because there's always going to be dangerous people, also assumes that there is no market solution to personal protection or home defense. It also assumes that there could be no arbitration service or mediation service to deal with people who were criminals. No idea has retarded the progress of human beings more then the idea that the way something was being done at any given time was the best possible way that it could be done. And usually the people who do these rationalizations will make one last-ditch effort. They'll say, well, you can get into the system. People can get into the system and change the system. They can only get into the system, in addition to needing a tremendous amount of resources and making an incredible amount of promises to special interest groups. And the barriers to entry into this system are nearly insurmountable for a good person, for a moral person. But once they're in the system, if they're going to use the system, they are using force. It's like saying if people don't like violence, they should grab a gun and start shooting. To be absolutely crystal clear, participation in politics as a politician or some kind of government official is not an option for good people. Instead of all the other ways that we're taught to divide up society into competing groups, black people, white people, Republicans, Democrats, rich and poor, I can give you two classes that you can use to think about this society from now on. And this is really courtesy of the writer and the philosopher Ayn Rand. The first is the productive class. And the second, the nemesis of the productive class, is the parasitic class. And if you're in the productive class, using your time and your talents and your energy to produce something, why would you ever switch to the class of people that preys upon the hard work of others for the benefit of themselves and their friends? So these are the authoritarian absurdities and the answers to the common rationalizations that perpetuate them. Now, I'm sure many of you are saying, boy, that sucks. What's the alternative? The alternative is the embrace of the philosophy of liberty. And for the sake of maximum clarity, I am going to be taking the text from a video called The Philosophy of Liberty that was based on the prologue to the book The Adventures of Jonathan Gullible by Ken Schoolin. And I'm just going to take that text and read it to you as a concise version of what this philosophy is. Maybe just adding a couple of my own notes or clarifications, really, where they're necessary. So here we go. The philosophy of liberty is based on the principle of self-ownership, the idea that you are the owner of your life. To deny this is to imply that another person has a higher claim on your life than you do. No other person or group of persons owns your life, nor do you own the lives of others. You exist in time, past, present, and future. This is manifest in the future as your life, in the present as your liberty, and in the past as the product of your life and liberty. To lose your life is to lose your future. To lose your liberty is to lose your present. And to lose the product of your life and liberty is to lose that portion of your past. A product of your life and your liberty is your property. This is the fruit of your labor, the product of your time, your energy, and your talents. Property is that part of nature which you turn to valuable use. Your property may also be the former property of others, acquired by you through voluntary exchange and mutual consent. Two people who exchange property voluntarily are better off, or they wouldn't do it. Only they may rightfully make those decisions for themselves. But at times, some people use force or fraud to take things from others without voluntary consent. The initiation of force or fraud to take life is murder. To take liberty is slavery. And to take property is theft. It is the same whether these actions are done by one person acting alone, by many acting against the few, or even by officials with fine hats. You have a right to protect your own life, liberty, and justly acquired property from the forceful aggression of others. And you may ask others to help defend you. But you do not have the right to initiate force against the life, liberty, and property of others. Thus, you have no right to designate some person to initiate force against others on your behalf. You have the right to seek leaders for yourself, but you have no right to impose rulers onto others. No matter how officials are selected, they are only human beings and they have no rights or claims that are higher than those of any other human beings, regardless of the imaginative labels for their behavior or the numbers of people encouraging them. Officials have no right to murder, to enslave, or to steal. You cannot give them rights that you do not have yourself. Since you own your life, you are responsible for your life. You do not rent your life from others who demand your obedience. Nor are you a slave to others who demand your sacrifice. You choose your own goals based on your values. Success and failure are both the necessary incentives to learn and to grow. Your action on behalf of others or their action on behalf of you is virtuous only when it is derived from voluntary, mutual consent. For virtue can exist only where there is free choice. This is the basis of a truly free society. It is not only the most practical and humanitarian foundation for human action, it is also the most ethical. Problems in the world that arise from the initiation of force by government have a solution. The solution is for the people of Earth to stop asking government officials to initiate force on their behalf. Evil does not arise only from evil people, but also from good people who tolerate the initiation of force as means to an end. In this manner, good people have empowered evil people throughout history. And confidence in a free society is to focus on the process of discovery in the marketplace of values, rather than to focus on some imposed goal or vision, using governmental force to impose a vision on others. This lack of imagination, combined with this reliance on force, is intellectual sloth, and typically results in unintended, perverse consequences. Achieving this free society requires courage to think, to talk, and to act, especially when it is easier to do nothing. And that is the philosophy of liberty in a nutshell. And when you compare and contrast this philosophy of liberty with those authoritarian absurdities, it should be so glaringly evident what the more logical and ethical choice is for an individual or for a society. So why do so many people believe and embrace and put their faith in the authoritarian absurdities? In the upcoming episodes of School Sucks Podcast, we will begin to identify and then deconstruct a series of lessons that I believe are embedded into the curriculum of public education. Once these lessons are identified, it will become obvious why people embrace the authoritarian absurdities. But once they are deconstructed, the philosophy of liberty will quickly become the only choice. Thanks for listening, and take care.